Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene podcast.
Love's in the air. We are the Post Credit Scene podcast, a 14 HQ original, lovers of film, TV, and theatre.
Yes, sir.
And this is a spontaneous episode, man. We weren't really meant to be here, but what I will say is, it wouldn't have been right for us to have just gone by another week and not have talked about some of the shows that I've released in the last week or so, give or take.
Yeah.
Really excited today because both shows, you could argue, are sort of cultural defining, probably two of the best of the year. And you can safely say that, knowing that there's still going to be great shows coming out.
Yeah.
It was like the back end of this year as well, and sort of within the summer as well. But I'm confident, that next year, both these shows will sort of sweep up in the awards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Emmys and BAFTAs. Yeah.
Before we do get into the episode, introduce the fellow hosts. Bisola, how do you do?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm all right, man. I got a little juice, you know what I'm saying?
Same. Mm.
Feeling a little bubbly, you know what I'm saying?
Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous.
My escapism delicious. Before work, innit?
Fair.
Back to reality tomorrow, mate. So, yeah. Manny?
I'm feeling good, man. I think it's the first time we drank together in... on a pod in quite some time.
Yeah.
Probably sits back in the last year.
Yeah, it's because we're always doing the morning shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck Jason.
Yeah, he's just... Anyway, let me not get
it. See, when... Bitch, you're not nice.
Yeah, Jason. But when I do that, it's definitely a joke.
Yeah, I was joking when I called his hammer dumb fuck.
Okay. You really believe so?
I was joking when I said he was a dumb F word, because I'm not going to swear anymore on the pod.
I mean, you already have. But...
Oh, yeah, this is an
I said she's the reason the YouTube got flagged, by the way.
It literally is.
The violence coming from you doesn't surprise me.
I think I can't, yeah. His hammer was putting me in, like, the worst mood.
I think that's a weird algorithm, though, because, like, if you're describing a series and you're talking about what happens in the show in a review, you're going to describe the violence. So you're going to flag me for that as well. It's a bit of a weird...
Yeah.
How they sort of gauge.
I think it was me saying I would like to... Pew, pew.
Got you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very specific.
Yeah. Very direct. Super direct.
How are you guys?
Oh, yeah. Can do that. We can do that. I'm okay, man. As I said, escapism
before work.
Yeah. Back to reality tomorrow.
How are you feeling about the fact that you haven't been outside recently?
Do you know what? Fine. I've been busy. And then my boy told me about, he was at an event yesterday. I won't say which one. He said, oh, it was an older crowd. He said there was some jams and that. Obviously, I don't care about that, innit? I'm just there for the good.
Oh, brother.
I don't care.
Brother.
I'm just there to enjoy music with my pals.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, pack it in.
But obviously, my friends love women. So if they're happy, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna love this guy.
You know what I mean? If they're happy and there's jans that are making them smile when they're there, what can I say, man? Makes me happy. So, yeah, man.
You done lying? Ready to start the pod for us?
Yes, so adolescence.
Yes, sir.
So, naturally, this show kind of popped up on everyone's radar before it even released. I think people saw the premise. Yeah. Stephen Graham is part of UK heritage. Mm-hmm. He is part of the institution of, you know, UK film and TV. An absolute legend. Whenever I see he's in a project, I'm immediately drawn.
100.
And want to watch it. Whether 100. It's Line of Duty, This Is England.
Have you guys watched Bodies yet?
No.
Please watch Bodies. It's on Netflix. It stars Stephen Graham.
It would be great to have an episode where we just talk about some of our favourites. Some of our actors.
I'm ready to talk about...
Creepy ass chair. Golly.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, that chair is... What have people been doing on that chair?
Okay.
Yours as well?
It's because I'm pulling up my socks at the same time.
Yeah, whenever I see Stephen Graham, I'm locked in. But it was really interesting, obviously, Ashley Waters involved.
Yeah. Do you know, when I saw Stephen Graham and Ashley Waters, I was actually more excited. The combo of the two.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think people say mean things about Ashley Waters sometimes. And
what?
Someone was like, oh, he's always typecast. Oh my gosh, he's not going to be there unless a gun's on set. And I was like, guys, can you actually pack it in for a sec?
That is funny.
I can't lie.
So Ashley Waters, as in his contract, has to be a gun on set before he takes on the role. Shout out
Ashadi. Shout out to Ashadi.
No, but I just think he's really good at things crime related. He's done a great job at it. That obviously we can't say the show, but the show he was on with my guy, he was good at that. Bulletproof. What was it called?
Who's my oh?
Yeah, I know.
But he's been anyway. This conversation.
That's not going out.
Loser. It's another day.
Yeah, no, Clark's a loser. Even like if you want to think he's innocent, he's still a loser anyway. He was brilliant in that show. He was actually the standout in Top Boy. Him and Kano. And he's like, he's been great in everything that has been crime related.
And he's not the first actor to predominantly do their work within crime related TV.
Yo, Vicky, what's her name? McClure?
Yeah, she loves the crime.
I've never seen her in anything that's outside of a Fed uniform. Like, she's just living a fantasy. She might as well just go be a Fed. Like, she's wasting everyone else's time.
and that's fine.
And it's okay. And I just think he does it really well. That's why I specified when I saw him and Steven, I was like, guys, why is he be in for an absolute ride?
But I was also intrigued because it had Erin Doherty. She was in A Thousand Blows. She played Princess Anne in The Crown as well.
Yeah. I didn't clock it was her until someone said it in my comments.
Yeah, it was her. And she's a theatre kid as well, so she's well-trained. Used to play football for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Decided to stop playing. Yeah. Decided to focus on acting instead, and it's paid its dues for sure. Any of you guys seen A Thousand Blows by any chance?
No, I haven't.
First two episodes.
Okay.
How are you finding it?
It's good.
Yeah.
I don't know why I started watching Empire.
That's it's really good. Yeah.
Empire is in the...
Yeah, that.
I'm rewatching it at the same time. Okay. And I'm also trying to binge Succession.
Do you know what?
She's really good in A Thousand Blows. And she was great as Princess Anne in The Crown as well. So she's
really,
you know, the acting cast is superb. And obviously we're going to get into some of the lesser known actors who are probably now sort of superseding any expectations.
Yeah.
But going into the series, any expectations from you guys? What did you know about the series? Did you know about the one shot take beforehand?
So on Twitter, the Netflix Twitter account literally said, it was all separate lines, like one take, one shot, one accused boy. And that was kind of just the premise of it. Yeah, and then we saw the beginning
of it. Immediately, so we're going to draw.
And I was like, 13th, but don't worry, I'm gonna mark that date. I said, don't you worry, I'm gonna mark that date. And I watched it like at 7 a.m. 8 a.m.
Yeah, it's 8. Sorry, I didn't need to do that. That was extra. Sorry, my bad. I apologize.
I had no idea about the one shot. I saw like a clip of the police officers going to
the opening scene, basically.
Yeah. But apart from that, I didn't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been one of you guys that must have mentioned it like fairly recently. I think that's what forced me to watch it. I can't remember exactly.
Was it me?
It might have been.
Thank you.
Let's go. It was a bit smaller than that.
Thank you so much.
Maybe go watch it. I want to talk more about the one shot, but I'm sure we'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Start talking about that.
So interestingly, just one bit of insight behind that. Apparently, from what I listened to, this was a premise that was already sold to, I think, Stephen Graham and his team before, and that they wanted whatever was going to be made of this show, they wanted it to be a one-take series. So Netflix set a precedent of saying we want something that's going to be a continuous one-shot, whether it's 4 episodes, 6 episodes.
Was Philip Barantini already on?
No.
So, okay.
But I'm going to assume, because Philip Barantini worked with Stephen Graham before on Boiling Point, which is a good film, really good film actually, quite dark, similar to The Bearish, but more British, you know. Philip Barantini did that same sort of technique with Adolescence. And Stephen Graham also says that these days he likes to work with quite a tight-knit team of actors, people that he knows he can work with and trust. So he's worked with Malachi Kirby before, worked with him on Boiling Point, he's worked with Erin Doherty on A Thousand Blows, worked with Ashley Waters, he was a producer, and I think he directed an episode on A Thousand Blows. Yeah. So team is quite tight-knit. His wife also works alongside him as a sort of producer and also as a cast member as well. So really tight-knit team, but I like that. You know, you bring people in that you know are going to deliver, you can trust, and I guess you want to work with good people. Do you know what I mean?
I love that they're not all just really huge, famous people as well. It's actually just good. They're just good at their job.
Good actors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good actors. Good at their craft. I guess the easiest way is to just do like an episode by episode kind of breakdown. Episode one. So firstly, Adolescence is a 4-part limited series which focuses on the arrest of 13-year-old Jamie Miller for the alleged murder of a schoolmate, Katie. And the highlight of the series, I guess the main point that everyone talks about, is sort of the storytelling technique, with each episode unfolding in a single continuous shot, which sort of enhances the... Anyway, we'll get into that because I know Manny's got a bag to dip into in terms of the one-shot technique. Episode one opens with sort of the... what I really enjoyed about the episode, it kind of just starts off with a normal conversation, and Ashley Waters is dealing with his sort of issues. Ashley Waters, Luke Bascombe, is dealing with his life with his child and so on and so forth, and they're just having a general chit-chat. So it gets to humanise these police officers who are about to do something so quite inhumane. It's part of their job, which is unfortunate, but it's also quite an inhumane thing to burst into someone's house at 7 a.m. in the morning or whatever it was. And I really enjoyed that aspect. Any thoughts on that before we delve into the actual?
Yeah, I think they've done quite good work with character writing right at the beginning.
Yeah,
like little stuff with Ashadi's character, Luke.
Luke, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eating the apple as a replacement for cigarettes. Again, showcasing that he's probably in a high stress job and he's not really dealing with stuff as well as he could do. The conversation that he has with his co-worker, talking about his son.
Frank Sargent.
Frank. Frank, what's his surname?
Sergeant. Sergeant Frank. One of the...
I think Sergeant Frank, yeah. But regardless, Frank, him telling her that he's more of the soft parent. That means I feel like he engages with his son a bit less. I feel like within the... And even... We're going to move on to the next scene in a bit. But even within... Just with his character, I feel like there's a lot of...
Context.
I learned a lot about him in a very
bare context. Piece of
time.
Humanizes him, man. He just brings a character to your towards you, and you get to know him. Because this is 4 episodes, so it's tough to really make real.
And I think they've done that throughout the whole show,
And
you know, in a really good way. But yeah, even this, just that initial scene of even just the camera work with, I know it's all one take. Oh, sorry, it's all one shot. But even like the angles, I don't know how that is done. I feel like there's so many instances where I'm watching the show and it's like, how did you guys work for the camera to work in that exact position and for the shot to be so gorgeous?
That's all I've been doing on TikTok is looking at the BTS. Like, I know every single person that works on set now. I've followed all of them on TikTok. I'm really like obsessed at how they did it. Because they did like, so the camera team did all the rehearsals first and they like rehearsed everything like it was a dance.
Okay.
Yeah, and they rehearsed it like that and then the cast would rehearse and then they would do a couple of takes together and each episode is about 10 to 12 takes. And I'm just like, that first one, they're talking about him being outside the car, then I'm having to make sure that the shot works well enough that he opens the door whilst they're like right next to the door. Insane.
Yeah, really impressive.
Insane. But I agree with you about learning so much about him immediately. And you kind of sets the tone for what kind of parent we understand he's going to be later in the series. But just him being like, oh, he doesn't want to go to school. And it's like, why would your child not want to go to school? Like, should you not think a bit deeper about that? Like, he's woken up at 6 a.m. to plan out a lie. Like, come on.
Yeah. Kind of plays into the entire theme of the series, though.
Yeah.
Parent-children relationships. Mm-hmm. And all that sort of thing. Really interesting. And then, bam, like, straight away, there's... But I like the fact that it takes us from that sort of calm, sort of solitude moment in towards the absolute chaos of the raid. And we see the police break in or raid into the home, and throughout the scene there's just constant chaos. You have different reactions, but they manage to capture all the different reactions of everybody in the different rooms, and it feels so immersive and so sort of surreal, and it kind of puts you in the position of the family members and what that's like to have your house raided at 7 a.m. and you know, there were small little details that I really appreciated, which we'll get into specifically with Jamie Miller. But what did you guys make of that scene of sort of them raiding the home of the Millers?
Talking about setting the scene and getting the center character really quickly, even the fact that they had the van outside the house and him being plumber instantly draws you to the fact that this guy is a part of the community. Because that's what plumbers do. They just do work around the community. And then as soon as they break through the door, you would assume that they're probably there for the dad or dead for...
He said, I didn't do anything.
Exactly.
I didn't do nothing.
So that instantly, like, I don't know, it draws a level of interest that I wouldn't have done so if we went straight into the house without any other information apart from like the van or even Ashadi's character. Why do you call it Ashley Waters' characters and the juxtaposition of that scene in terms of like how calm the conversation they had in the car and then with the camera work where they see all the cars driving up into the house and then bam, everything just move a bit more hectic. It just draws you into the intrigue of these characters right away.
Yes.
No, I agree with you. Like, retweet. Yeah, heavy. Yeah. But it's like, it was the chaos and then there's just a moment of calm in there where he wets himself.
That's what I was going to get towards.
Yeah.
Kind of humanizes this.
This is it.
Alleged murderer.
At the time he's accused, yeah. So we don't actually know. And you almost want to believe that his parents, like, the fact that his dad immediately says, I haven't done anything. Yeah. It's like,
Yeah.
The best part of you wants to believe that his dad's a wrong one. Like, it can't be this little boy that still has the ability to wet himself out of fear. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, oh my goodness, come on. And like, the daughter's like, she gets dropped to her knees and she's like crying, but she's not making loads of noise. Like, she's actually quite quiet. She's probably the most silent in that whole scene. It's a dad that's still making tons of noise, being like, it can't be him. Like, he's like, yeah, he's a little boy. And I think that scene is when I was like, yeah, in all the, because of course you know the parents beforehand, so you just know he's going to do it. Yeah, but it's like, before that, you're like, oh my goodness, he's still a child. I think that's what that scene does. Like, and it's so quiet. That's when everyone's actually quiet in the house. When he's like, would you like a moment to like change? And then
he said, oh, let me get your dad for you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then that's like, oh my gosh, yeah, he is a child and he still needs someone to look after him.
And that's a constant throughout when Ashley Waters is, when Luke, played by Ashley Waters, is reading him his rights. Again, it's done in a way in which we're speaking to a child and he really needs to be able to understand what you're saying. And it's spoken in a way where he's very forceful. I don't know how he managed to do it, but he found the duality of forceful but also still being very like, sort of understanding and patient of the of the situation, which I found really, really...
I think it was watching him still be a parent. I think you'll understand that Luke is still a parent, so he's treating him almost like a son, not completely, but like being like, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm still like authoritative in this moment in time, but do you understand these are your rights and I'm advising you that you do this. And even when they get into the van and he is legal guardian at that moment in time is a little person, also thought that was really intentional
to be the person smaller than
and just like then we just see the we're visually seeing power and how that looks and what that's displayed at on the screen.
I think the first time we get to see and understand an aspect of Jamie's character beyond oh he's a child is when the police officers ask him, who do you want to speak to? And immediately he says, my dad, who do you want to be your sort of guardian with you? And again, within the context of what we know about what's happened since and episode 4, which I think is actually a really good episode and people seem to hate it, I don't get it. It makes so much sense as to why he's called his dad, because there's little Easter eggs throughout the different episodes, all of them actually, where you get to see he's really attached to his dad to arguably sort of fault.
Yeah.
And I think episode 4 explores that most profoundly, which, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I was going to say stuff about episode 4, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. I think in the police station, even the conversation that the guy that was signing him in, he kept reinforcing, oh, son, lad.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where you could question, why are you that friendly with him? But I think...
Looked so nervous as well, like, and this is why I think Owen Cooper did such a good job, like, him biting his nails, like, I feel like he genuinely was scared, like, he looked, like, terrified.
He was twitching, he was shaking.
Everything just felt like it couldn't be acting, it just felt like real life.
And there was moments where the sergeant that was signing him in, or the police officer, was asking him questions, and he was like, what? Like he zoned out of the moment, and then realised, and then listened in again, and he realised what was being asked of him, but he kept zoning out throughout that conversation, which I found really interesting. Another thing I really liked about the episode is that it took us through the different moments of the investigation within the station and sort of them signing him in. We'll get into all that stuff. But within just the quiet moments for the police officers as well.
Yeah.
So when they get back to the, I'm going to assume they're like foyer reception area where they sort of chill out and they just have normal conversations again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's back to work and it's back to the intense nature of this job. It gave us a really good insight of shows like Line of Duty, which I love, and Luther are great for what they do in terms of the detective side of things and investigating criminals and investigating corrupt police officers. But I think this show just gave us an insight into what a day-to-day can look like, like within the space of a few hours.
Anyway. One of my favourite parts when they were in the police station is when Luke's mum? Why am I getting these characters mixed up? Jamie's mum is asking a question and then she was like, oh, whatever the surname was, Miss Miller, we'll get back to you. And then she goes through the door and it's like super loud, then it goes silent. Then she walks up the stairs, it's still silent. Then they get to their area and they're talking and then Luke's asking a question about another case. And she's kind of like, can I take a breather? Like, bitch, can we breathe?
You mean his colleague?
Yeah.
He's really intense on the job though.
Yeah, and I think it's that scene where she walks in, he's like doing whatever he's doing, asking loads of questions, and she's kind of like, no one started working yet. We had to start working early because we had to get this boy, but
no one else is doing this. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, brother, can you relax?
Yeah,
that moment is when, so after seeing Luke in the beginning when he's talking to Adam, and then Luke there, you know exactly what kind of person he is. Just
even
those two
the conversation
impressions.
Where he was talking to Superintendent Sergeant. I'm going to assume she's a superintendent. No.
She's a DS. So,
DS.
DS?
She's a Frank.
And he says, oh, do you want to go over this one more time? I think it was actually when they were just about to interview Jamie. It's like, do you want to go over this one more time? And it's like, again, it just gives you insight into who this character is within, like, what, the space of, like, what, 5, 6, 7 words. You get to know this is a super, a very much intense, dedicated to his job police officer who wants to nail this and he's really, really dedicated to his craft. That's not to say that Sergeant Frank isn't.
Yeah.
It just shows that there's the different ways you can approach the job.
Yeah.
Which I found really, really interesting as well. Were there any other points before we get into maybe the conversation? Another scene, which was really tough, and it goes back to your point about him being a child, was when he had to get strip searched.
Bro.
And you see the reaction of
Stephen Graham. Yeah.
Stephen Graham. And
it foreshadows everything Jamie says about what's his name in the show? I've forgotten.
Eddie
Miller.
Owen Miller. Sorry, Jamie Miller. Owen.
No, the dad.
The dad, Eddie. Dad. Right?
Oh no, Eddie Miller. Yeah.
Eddie.
Yeah.
Eddie Miller. When he's like why am I saying they're real government names? When Jamie later in the series says like he kind of looks away when he does anything wrong or anything, yeah. There are like 3 or 4 moments where his dad's looking away in the first episode. That makes you feel really uncomfortable once you get the context in episode 3. Mm. So when he's like, he starts getting strip searched, he doesn't look at him. Mm. And it's like, you were like, you didn't want it to happen, but instead of you to look over and make sure your child's okay, you kind of just been like, let it happen.
There was moments in that scene where Jamie breaks down,
mm-hmm.
and like verbally he reassures him, which is great. But I think Jamie's a kid. And he needed physical reinforcement that his dad cared for him and his dad was there for him. And I think you could argue that he's probably never had that.
Definitely, because all his dad was like, context. It's all right, son, it's all right, son. That's all we heard from him, really. But it's like,
do you want some cornflakes? Eat your cornflakes. Yeah, like, he needed a physical.
Need a hug, really. Yeah. He's like, give that boy a hug. But he's still 13 at this point. So, like, it's like, are you going to look
after it? It's all Easter eggs and sort of layering in terms of.
To give you context of who these characters actually are, that leads to the reveal that we get towards the reveal, quote unquote.
And more importantly, why young men like Jamie might end up doing what they do. And again, it's not one specific reason, which is why I think the show is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you like little bits here and there to piece together things.
Yeah. Even with the strip search scene, it's probably it might be the most heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Scene
Could
because
you elaborate
of,
on as to why.
He's a child. Sorry.
That's what it is.
He's a child. And also, like, Stephen Graham, Eddie, being his dad, and in that moment, feeling like he can't do anything about it, felt hopeless.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most worst feelings that you can have in terms of, like, physically feeling that you can't do anything in that moment. And your son, essentially, he probably perceived it as being violated to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
You're being asked to be stripped naked in front of these strangers. You're a child. And it just made it. The scene was very uncomfortable, even the way that they spoke to him, and just the childlike, not childlike, he's a child. The way he was talking like a child in the background, and we don't get, because we didn't actually see it as well. I think it made it even worse because all we saw it was from the perspective of Eddie and the facial expression he was given, and
the solicitor. I don't know if you clocked it, but in the back, the solicitor is also quite like he's reacting. I think he even said, "Is this necessary? Do you need it?"
Yeah. But and the solicitor has his back turned as well. So. So I remember sometimes we pan towards the solicitor sometimes as well. He said that it wasn't necessarily at the beginning, but then after that it was just after it was just Eddie and his facial reaction and just that the constant questions that he was asking. I can't remember exactly what he was saying, but it's just that the fear, the urgency that he had in terms of like, I need to help my son out, but there's actually nothing that I can physically do.
Yeah.
And even just like, even my whole opinion with being strip searched, it's such a fucking insane thing,
mm-hmm.
especially when you've grown up and you've been like 14, 15, and understanding like there's people my year, my school age that have been strip searched. And then the way they talk about it, it's not nice.
Yeah.
It's not nice. And then that just reminded me of that. It's like, it's a proper heartbreaking scene for me personally anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for real.
Then you move on to the scene in the room. So when he gets questioned.
Okay. What were your thoughts on that specifically?
Honestly, yeah. That's when I like, you know, you're watching something, yeah, and you're locked in. But the level of locked in I got in, yeah, when I watched that scene, that's when I cried. So I cried throughout the whole series, yeah. Okay. Didn't help that my parents cried that morning. Honestly, the worst thing ever. But.
Of course, I won't believe you.
Yeah, of course not. I'm faking it, aren't I? Anyway, so I was watching it and I was like, this is just insane. Like, it's Jamie wanting to lie, but not being able to lie, but then taking advice to cancel and also being said that he's done it or feeling like he's done a bad thing. So counsel being like, you don't have to answer that. And he's like, I think at one point he says, sorry, no comment. Or like he apologized before he says no comment. Mm-hmm. And it's him being like, it's the moments you see throughout the series of Jamie still being 13 that makes this show harder to watch.
Yeah.
Is that he's still a child. He's done a sick and disgusting thing, but he's still a child. It all changed by episode 3, but he still is a kid.
Even then.
Yeah. Even at, in moments in episode 3, I'm still like,
yeah.
Ah! Like, it's just like that emotion is like, for fuck's sake, like, come on. And that, so when his dad's kind of like, why would he have done it? Like, I was on call and blah, blah, blah. And then they're showing the footage. Then,
but you know what? They didn't, boom.
Yeah.
Here's the footage.
Yeah.
It was a slow, patient reveal to try and get him to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing to do for a 13-year-old who's been accused of and has killed somebody. But, you know, I think Ashley Waters' his character, Luke, almost just called him Ashley Waters, he constantly, throughout the two episodes that we see him in, wants to know the why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he makes a point, the writing makes a point of making it clear they want to know the why. And the purpose of the series mm-hmm. is the why.
Yeah.
It's already been done. So the conversations around the action aren't pointless. But if we want to stop this cycle of behavior, whatever negative behavior it is, it could be whatever it is, we want to stop it. And the way to stop it is to know why people are doing these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his determination to know the why, which contrasts Sergeant Franks, who doesn't really want to know the why. She wants to focus on the fact that this poor girl has been killed, and we constantly forget the victims in this situation.
Yeah.
We always tend to empathize with the person that's committed the crime, especially if they're children.
Yeah.
And it's that tough duality of like, he's a kid, but he's
still a murderer. He's a murderer.
One thing that caught my eye going back, because I know we need to get to episode 2, 3, 4, got a jam-packed episode, but he was calling before when his parents come, and his dad's, I think his dad's slamming on the door.
Mm.
And he's saying, Dad, I didn't do it, Dad.
Mm.
But his mum and sister were there as well.
Yeah.
And again, as we see later on in the episode,
in a way,
there's a constant sort of, he's constantly drawn towards his father,
mm-hmm.
less so his sister, and definitely less so
his
mother. And we see why in episode 4.
And even his mum being like, why would he ask for you? Like, he's no good of needles. Like, you can't even take his back. He can't watch that happen. Like, his dad literally can't watch that happen. Like, I can do this. Like, why would he not call me?
Even something on the mum, even from the first scenes that we saw it in, up to the scene of her being questioned by the solicitor, her overreaction to some of stuff, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. Your son is getting nicked. And when she was in the solicitor's room saying that, oh, they pushed us to the ground, they did this and that. And then the daughter was like, no, that's not what happened, mum.
Mm.
But I can see my mom doing that. Like, you know, and it's not necessarily, bro, like, you're in...
your dad just got arrested.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're in a very high-tense situation. Like, your emotions are running through. And I think that's part of the reason as to why he never asked for the mom, because she's probably more emotionally connected.
One of the reasons, aren't
you? Yeah, one of the reasons. Yeah. She's more emotionally connected to the son that than dad would have been.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the biggest issues of the actual film. And I don't think he would have been able to get away with lying with his mum in the room.
Oh, definitely not.
With the questions that that he might perceive that they were going to ask. And I think that's one of the reasons why he looked to his dad, because his dad never reacts to anything towards him, because his dad is always willing to look away while his mum is not.
Also, his dad wasn't home. So his dad his dad wasn't home that night.
Oh, yeah.
He was actually on call. So his mum would know. His mum actually knows the fact that... His mum knows what time he went out and came back in, whereas his dad was like, I actually wasn't there, so I don't know. I went out this time and I came back at this time, so I don't know where he was.
Yeah.
But I saw a really interesting discussion online about the first red flag for most people, because I guess some people are still treating it like a whodunit as opposed to a why done it, which is, some of you are just slow and you leave it to God. No, for me, you just have to leave this one to God. Someone was like, we already know something's wrong here because he's 13, and he's out and about at 9, 10 p.m.
8:30, he's out. What's he doing?
No, for real, because what are you doing? Like, maybe...
Why are you out at 10 p.m.?
No, maybe I was just like, I was on Smash, my parents went on it. But come at 13, you're in what, year 8?
Yeah.
No one was out. I went to an area where, like, a lot of the kids were out, like, early in their age. At 13, they weren't out.
Yeah.
They weren't out.
What time? What time is this, though?
This is...
What time would a 13-year-old realistically be allowed out?
By six maximum.
No, it's cap, man.
And even then, like, it's huge cap. 13,
maybe eight, you're back.
Eight. Yeah, I got like me. I was not out.
I was out.
No, you're eight, you're back home. Like, you're arriving back to your house. Yeah,
makes sense. That's what was always, we're going to have dinner. No, tea. We're going to have tea.
Yeah. But if you're going to have, like, if you're going to go for like a cinema or anything, you go get, like, you'd deem it the later film, which would be like the 6 p.m. And you'd be close to your house as well. You're never going to be far away.
That's another thing as well.
Yeah, like, you're never going to be. If your journey takes you about an hour to get home, you shouldn't be there in the first place.
Exactly.
That's how you have to lie as well. Like, you shouldn't be there in the first place. So that was the first, like,
red flag.
Not really. Red flag, people keep saying it, but I see it more as like the first why.
It's
like,
sign,
these, yeah, these kids aren't being parented the way we once were. And it's not like a back in my day thing, but it's that things have changed so much. And by episode two, which we're going to get to, you see how much has changed. And that was just the first, he's out really late. His parent wasn't home. His other parent was home, but he hasn't chosen her to be in the room with him. Something's afoot. I think that was the first, like, okay, that's the first why.
Some detective, she said something's afoot. Something's afoot.
You've been watching that,
The Resident.
Something's afoot.
Good show, good show, really good show.
Amazing show.
I guess because we need to get through this, the scene of where we see he's done it, which is followed by the closing scenes of father and son.
Yeah.
And before that, he asked him, be honest, son.
Be honest.
Yeah. Did you do this, son?
Did you do this, son?
We need to get you some voice acting.
We do.
which was beautifully acted by Stephen Graham first.
Yeah.
My goat.
And he was so quick to just accept the answer.
Yeah.
Which is what the point that you made. So quick to accept the answer.
Because you just want to. Because
you want to believe your son.
Yeah, you don't want to think your son's killed someone. Like, you know, if your son was actually, I didn't do it, you'd be like, well, he didn't do it.
Yeah.
But the solicitor had warned him. They've got evidence which seems to suggest.
Yeah. But you still want to be like, circumstantial.
Your
13 year old. No, why she was out here unclogging toilets? It's impossible.
Even in the scene when the solicitor, the son, and Eddie were having a discussion, and then I got like halfway into the interview, the solicitor was like, I think it's time we need to take a break here.
Yeah.
And then it was like, no, he's fine. He can carry on. And right after that is when they revealed the fact that they had the footage. So even just to go back to your point or your point?
Both.
Yeah. In terms,
twins.
Yeah, twins. Yeah, as well. In terms of just the way that he overprotected his son and believed him based on him telling him, yeah, I didn't do it.
Yep.
And even the solicitor is warning you. Is like,
Are you sure, buddy?
Yeah, are you sure? I think we need to take a break here.
Like, no, I'm discuss good. This properly. Yeah. Like,
he did that shit. Guilty as fuck.
Guilty as fuck.
One thing I do want to mention, even though it's consistent throughout all the episodes, the colour scheme, especially in the scene that it had with the solicitor first was speaking to the family within that little foyer, wherever it was, and the camera work with how all of them were coloured and with the colours of the background, it was just gorgeous to look at.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did that. I think all of them wearing
what do you think?
What it meant?
Well, yeah, do you think there's a purpose towards that other than sort of aesthetics?
I don't know.
It just felt intentional. I don't know the reason behind it, but
yeah,
it
definitely intentional.
Because police stations as a whole
are quite grey.
This had like a grey blue.
Yeah.
And the solicitor, the daughter, and the mother all had greyish blue clothes they were wearing that kind of blended them into the background of the foyer they were in, but the dad didn't. The dad had like
he stood out.
He had like a red orangey.
Yeah. I could be stretching it, but I think it also speaks to his character. Like
it does. I feel like it's the mood of everything. They're all wearing grey and blue because like no one's got time to get a yellow jumper. Like even when they're pouring her clothes onto the bed, like initially she just grabs anything and it's just like grey black hoodie, whatever it is, just like blend in. Whereas he's kind of, I think it's just the belief that your son's not a killer. So it's like, I'll wear anything I want to wear because my son's not a killer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what
And he's also
like.
Quite like a fiery, as we see in episode four.
Yeah.
Nowhere probably near violent, but very fiery, which again is probably a byproduct or ends up being the byproduct of who Jamie partly ends up being.
I'm going to say one thing, in relation to the colours. I'm going to jump to episode four quickly. But obviously in that episode we've seen wearing like an orange, red shirt or something.
Orange.
Orange, thank you. Throughout episode four, I can't remember what colour he's wearing, but he's wearing like a light, I think it's like a light yellow or light sand colour. It's called my guy. But it's definitely not blue. After we get the review at the end of the four, he changes to the top, and the top is light blue.
And it's, Danny breaks down.
And Danny breaks down. It's the same color as everybody else was wearing at the beginning of the first episode. I think there's definitely some significance in it. I haven't looked into it. I don't know if it's relation to whether he believed his son or not, or he's finally come to terms with who he is as a person.
I think he's accepting that his son's a killer.
Yeah.
I think it's actually the realization. I think that was that, even him being like, do you like it? Finally, the time he's speaking to his daughter normally, it's like, do you like the top? Like, the mum boy's top. Like, do you like this? And it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, you're a normal person. It's like a firecracker.
You finally accepted it.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry to jump, but the colour thing is to you.
Episode two, we spoke about this before, but the episode kind of has like a Wire feel.
Mm-hmm.
Something like each episode / each season with The Wire has its own sort of theme that it explores. This seemed to explore, for me, more so, not just young people, but the education system as a whole was a byproduct and an enabler of young people and who they end up being in the society that we're in today. The lack of support for schools, the lack of support for teachers, the lack of teachers who are capable to deal with the young people of today as well. Yeah. There's so many things that go into it beyond just obviously the kids being tyrants. You know, that there's that little rat, I've seen that kid 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah.
In my time as a student, obviously I worked with kids as well. I've seen that specific face and that type of behavior through my, I'm sure you guys
100%
have as well.
What school though? Yeah. Is it there weren't that many of them, but
there was enough.
You only need one.
Yeah, you only need one.
And they're the class disruptor.
Yeah.
The class disruptor.
So jarring.
But what did you guys make of this specific episode? Obviously, we've got 3 and 4 to get through. I thought it was a great episode. I said, education system, the way it's flawed, the way it's being failed, teachers are being failed, students are then being failed. I saw an interesting take about Jade as well, the young black girl, which we can probably get. I think I came across that video as well, which kind of innocuously went over my head until someone brought it up and like, oh yeah, it makes makes sense. In terms of when I say over my head, there were so many things that I read about her character.
Mm-hmm.
Poor relationship with her mum, mm-hmm.
yeah,
dealing with the grief of losing her best friend, and is immediately being forced to sort of be not the face of it, but the first person that's questioned as to what's happened to Katie.
Mm-hmm.
Which then speaks to obviously Luke's determination to find out the why and what's going on. But yeah, episode two, thoughts. What do you like about it?
I think it might be my favourite episode.
I thought it was my second favourite. I was going to say it was my second after that.
I think it might be two and three of my favourites.
Yeah.
To speak a bit on quickly on Jade, and also I think what the episode two really done was set the tone, not just set the tone, but cemented what the show is really about in terms of like the relationship that young boys have with girls and women and how they treat them and where that can essentially come from.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes you can see that how the school,
fostering ground, man. It's a breeding ground.
It's a breeding ground for misogyny. It's a breeding ground for antisocial behaviour.
And if I'm honest, and I hold myself accountable, Udar went to a boys' school. I would have uttered or thought similar things at the time until you end up growing up and you start to realise like how to carry yourself, I guess.
Yep.
Or you're told by women of their experiences around men. But before that, I probably would have been one of those little kids who would have said ridiculous, rude, stupid, innocuous, dumb things without realizing that those words can end up being something far worse later on in life.
You went to an all-boys school?
Yeah.
Do you think it was... Do you think you saw more of that stuff or less of it?
That's a good question. More of it in a different way.
That's so interesting because...
Have you seen more in a different way versus that you would have saw in a normal school?
Yeah, just in a different way though. Like probably maybe similar, maybe a bit more.
Because
but
the misogyny, you can't really play it out as much because there's not enough women around or girls around for that to be a thing.
But it's more how it's we more speak to thinking, each other about women, how we speak to each other about teachers.
Oh my days.
And I think it'll definitely be worse in our boys' school because you're not interacting.
There's no women to interact with as well.
Yeah. Exactly. You might have a thought in terms of because the boys, how girls move, how girls behave, so on and so forth. And you don't really have anything to tell you otherwise because all you're interacting with is other boys that are not interacting with girls. But if you go to a boys' school, to an extent, you might feel a bit different, think a bit differently because you're interacting with other girls. That's an assumption.
Because the stats around like single-sex schools is that young girls do better in all-girl schools.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed schools are actually pretty much for boys. They actually only do better in mixed-gender schools. Like grades, attendance and behaviour, it's way higher in a mixed gender school for boys.
Yeah.
Whereas for girls, they do well, like way better. As in like
and all that
some of
sense.
The best schools in the country that are not even just single gender, best schools in the country full stop tend to be
all girls.
All girls.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
So it's just interesting that knowing that and then seeing how everything played out at that school.
Question for you.
Yeah.
You're the youngest here, and mm-hmm. I don't mean that in like a patronising way. So you would have been the closest to this generation. Particular generation, age group, etc.
Yeah.
What differences did you notice?
This was it. When I was watching, I was talking to my friend the other day, yeah. I was quite fortunate because I went to quite a liberal school. So that kind of stuff would never happen. Like, you'd see pockets of it, but not to that extent.
Pockets of what, though?
Like, what do you mean, shut up, miss? Are you joking? You're on Red Report, and you've got detention for a month, and your parents are getting called in, because who are you talking to like that? If they heard a swear word while she were in the corridor, my friend was like, oh, that fucking bitch. We were just talking in general. Her teacher heard, was like, Red Report. Like, you know you're on Red Report. Your mum's coming in tomorrow morning. We'll discuss it further. So yeah, like,
I have a different experience, man.
So this is it. But I went to a mixed gender school. And I went to a mixed gender school. I don't even want to say that part. Mixed gender school. And it is quite liberal in its thought, yeah? So even things like misogyny was kind of kicked out by, what I saw anyway, by year 9, year 10. If you were still 15, 16, being like that, it's kind of weird. Like, we had openly gay couples in our school.
Try it.
Yeah,
yeah, that kind of, I'm saying that's
different.
That's what I'm saying. So like that kind of issue where you're talking to a teacher like that. No, even when someone passed
generational
away,
thing though.
Maybe because even when someone passed away in my school, and there was like doing like group grief counselling and stuff. You were allowed to swear and be angry and stuff, but things were always nipped in the bud. It'd be like, okay, you can't talk to teachers like that. Remember, we had a fed come to our school one time and was talking, and it was actually quite racist. Like, he was super racist, and someone was like, oh fuck him, yeah, in the assembly. Oh, it all kicked off. We all got detention the whole year. They were like, yeah, you're all coming back here tomorrow. You're here till 4. And we're like, for fuck's sake, that wasn't even me that swore, but everyone, like, that's how my school was. So it's so interesting watching this and seeing how they're talking to teachers in particular, seeing how they're talking to each other.
Saint Doncaster, just for context as well.
Yeah, that a lot of it is different because of how liberal my school was. And I finished school in 2018. So it's just.
Check.
It reminds me a lot of my school.
I was in recess. I was 3 years deep at that point. Go on, Kim.
Like, I remember, like, in my school, like, especially with, like, I could see how teachers were, like, fed up of, like, certain classes and they just didn't want to be in there.
No
more. Yeah. I don't know how it worked in your school, but, like, obviously you had, like, your form you were in, but then you got split up for classes.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, our English teacher, when he saw us, like, come in, I could tell, like, he was like, oh, these men again. And I'm not proud to say, but I was part of that.
I see it with a smiling face.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I made her cry.
Well, they were like, bro, like, yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, but we also had pathways in my school, so we had, like, they used to be coloured, but we had like A and B path. So like option A was like everyone's doing higher papers. You have to do triple science and a language and something else. I was on that part of the year, but before we used to be in like our form groups for non-set classes.
Yes, so same.
All the other ones are like music and all that.
Yeah,
good
that's
stuff.
What I'm talking about.
And there were pockets of misogyny. There was pockets of racism at my school.
Right, so
Racism and drugs. That was a big issue.
My school's in Peckham, so
racism
was basically.
You were a majority in your school.
You don't know how good you had it.
I was the majority. Facts.
Yeah, you were a majority in your school. I wasn't.
The white kids were the minority.
Yeah.
Weird.
There were white kids in your school. Don't lie. There was like 3 of them, innit? All Romanian.
I say like there's like a 10% of was white.
Eastern European.
All types.
Yeah. In Peckham at the time, 100%. Like, there wouldn't have been anything else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went to school in North Dulwich.
Irish. So, there would have been a lot of Irish Catholics.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So I was... One thing we did see as the years, like, that I've related to in the school system in general, as the years got on at school, I started off with quite a few black kids in my year. By year 11, they were all kicked out for other things. Don't get me wrong, one of them got arrested recently and I was like, yo, lock that boy up.
I won't lie, my school was exactly as that.
But like, it just got more and more white by the time we hit year 11. I was like, I had a friendship group of just ethnic minorities. We weren't in the black group, just ethnic minorities. And we always band together as one. And that's what I related to in the series when I was like, how is Jade going to get...
Jade is a minority.
Yeah. And she really is not like, just not in how she looks as well, but also in how she thinks. And she has lost the only person that was with her and her rider. And the adultification you see immediately. Like, you see it immediately and it's like, oh my goodness, I get this. Yeah. That's what I related to the most. Yeah. I went around the houses to say that, but yeah.
For me, what was really interesting about the episode, there was a moment that stuck out to me. It was when the teacher that's walking them around,
yeah,
she takes them to Mr. Malik's car. No.
Mr. Malik, yeah.
Let me make sure I'm getting this. She takes to Mr. Malik's class. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't the teacher after sort of fair skin.
No, Malik, you're right.
And she introduces Luke.
Yeah.
But she didn't introduce
Frank. Right? Yeah.
She's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And it was like misogyny and the exclusion of women, I guess, is the word I'm going to use, intentionally or not, is embedded with everybody.
Yep.
From a very young age. Yep. And it's something that we do on a day-to-day basis.
Isn't she higher ranked to Luke?
No,
I don't think so.
He would be a senior.
Okay.
And you can kind of tell in the dynamic.
I know in the dynamic, but I want to know if it was actually the case.
Yeah, because obviously it was just man's play. And that to me was just like, the series is just dropping these Easter eggs of like, just letting you know what the series is trying to tell you.
Yeah.
So when people say to me, one, it's boring, two,
boo,
there's no message, three, I'm like, ah, it's like,
you have to leave people to God, you know? The commentary around this one, I'm like, ah, God, we're finished. And some of you,
the racism stuff, like
Dr.
Saying,
Umar said, down for good. Like, some of you caught me put down
racism
for good
stuff. Is, that's an issue for me. Like, people saying, oh, why is it a young white boy doing?
I can't lie, when I watched it, like, I thought of my nephew. I wasn't thinking of, obviously, I know he's a white boy, but that's not the point.
Also, you guys wanted more of you on screen. You got it. But clap for yourself. You got a white boy and a white family, white-dominated school.
But that didn't bother me. It was like, how are you not seeing
what the actual issue is?
What the message is. And the intensity of what's being portrayed on screen, which requires such talented acting, such talented creators, filmmakers, guys that are behind the scenes in front of the camera, bringing this to life, and you can't see that. So I always respect people's opinions. I'm like, when people in my comments were saying, I was just like, fair enough. Like, it was when I was replying to you, I was like,
do you ever thumbs down? I do thumbs down on the ones I don't like.
Oh, fair enough. And
I want you to know that I didn't like this.
Yeah, stay there.
Just to
stay there, but I want you to know that I didn't like it.
Expand on that. I know
which part, sorry?
On in terms of like the her introducing Mr. Malik and not bringing in and not forgetting that Frank was there. Also, the relationship the reason why I really like this episode is like so much because of what's happening in the background as well, and I'm actually showcased us how boys are thinking in terms of how they treat girls and women, and how that's also perpetrated within the school itself. The example that you gave, also the fact that when we see like incidents throughout the school, we'll keep seeing boys being told off by the teacher because they're constantly misbehaving.
She hated the I think he's the PE teacher.
The PE teacher, because he felt like a teacher I had at school. That PE teacher, when Adam's getting bullied and he goes to the boy that's bullying him,
you've got your own money.
You've got your own money. Oh, well, no, you got free school lunch anyway.
Yeah.
You can already see that this school is like lingering with poverty.
Yeah.
Number one. But number two, he's getting bullied. Can we address the matter at hand?
Yeah,
like, and you're so dismissive. And even like in the queue, he's like, ladies, get in line. And I'm like, oh, I know what that teacher is.
Yeah.
Like, I know what that teacher is. He thinks he's super cool. He thinks he's down with it, but he doesn't actually care that much. But everyone will go to him because he's down and he's cool. He's like, yeah, sir, this happened. And he's like, he's blurred the lines between guardian and
authority.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just, I'm going to touch on one more thing because we want to move on, is how the interaction between Jade and Ryan went, and how it was completely polar opposites. When Luke sat down with Jade, it felt more like an interrogation. In terms of like asking questions about what's her name, about Katie, but when he sat down with Ryan after he got punched, what he first had to do was connect with Ryan before eventually asking him questions that he wanted to get answered to. But Jade never got the level of grace, and it just showcased again another example that they had throughout the whole episode in terms of how boys are treated in comparison to how girls are treated. And kids will see these things. Like, it's not like you can treat somebody some type of way and a child, even if it's little stuff. I think we'll get talk more about that in episode four. We'll get to episode four. But the way that the women were treated in this episode in comparison to the men, even when the boys kept giving the bligh to Mr. Malik, the shitty teacher that wasn't even in the classroom.
He was going to whack on a fucking movie, mate. They're having the time of their life.
All they had to do was whack on... that's all they had to do, was whack on a movie. He wasn't even there on time. But they kept making excuses for him.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have done that if that was a female teacher. And I feel like this episode done a really good job of highlighting how these little things and how treatment of women and girls are in comparison to other men, and how that could potentially result into what happens to Katie, by Ryan. But yeah,
he's kind of coddled.
Kids, can I just say, yeah, you're the one. I'm not listening through this because there's going to be too many gems to pick out. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. I got it.
Aww,
no, there's gems in this, man. There's loads of gems. I guess there's two moments to speak about. One is Adam breaking down beyond me, way beyond me, bro. That news, that's emoji stuff. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, I know how to use emojis, but what they're doing,
it's all language.
But what they're doing is completely
cipher, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's cipher. So I knew the pill stuff, but I didn't know the exploding pill stuff. Like we had the pill stuff a bit. Like it's just.
Can you imagine trying to break that down from a child to a parent?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even to us, it's obscure. So imagine what it's like for someone of Luke's age, speaking to his son and trying to understand. And Ashley Waters literally said he doesn't understand the social media thing, which is literally what they depicted on screen. And I'm going to assume he played a huge part in this specific episode in terms of his disconnection from social media to where, compared to young children who essentially would have grown up in a social media era.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to demonize social media because I don't think that's the point. I think the point is how do we educate young people and children to use this sparingly and safely at the same time.
Do you know what? It's really interesting because in first ep, where he's like, well, you and Katie were friends, obviously. She's just commenting underneath your pictures, blah, blah. They're like, well, you guys were boys, so clearly what was the breakdown? Mm-hmm. And it's Jamie, you're watching him itch to kind of be like, well, we're not friends because she's not saying anything nice to me. Yeah. Then Adam breaking it down, and then we're seeing like early cracks of Adam potentially getting groomed or potentially being a victim to this same manosphere. Yeah, the same
Red
manosphere.
Stuff. Yeah.
And it's like, him being like to his dad, even though his dad wants to hear him speak, he's clearly asked him like speak, and him being like, well, do you want to listen or are you going to run off and do something else?
Yeah.
It's like, you've already blamed him even before he's done anything. Mm. And that means that it's just so much built up like resentment for him before he breaks it down. And then him being like, well, are you on this stuff as well? Like, yeah, Jamie's at it, but like, what about you? Like, are you good? And him being like, yeah, I'm fine. Mind you, he's getting bullied and he's definitely en route to that.
Exactly, yeah.
That's like first step before, like, God forbid we ever get season two, which we never will, because I feel like they're quite edgy on that. But I know a lot of people want that because people are still treating it like a whodunit because they're not smart. If we ever did, the continuation would be Adam being eventually in that, because it's just that breakdown, that full disconnect between the millennials and Gen Alpha. I think it's the biggest generational divide I've seen. Maybe because I'm in it now, but it's crazy.
Even now, I'm just realizing the parallels between Eddie and Luke, in terms of, even because Luke's son, Adam, would always message his dad when he wants to get out of school, because his dad would just say yeah. And the same way that Jamie called for his dad when he was in trouble, it was because both these men, even though their sons have done completely two different things, go to their dad for help because they know the dad will just do yeah, because they're not engaging with them.
Probably because they don't know how to, and I think that's what the show is trying to say, is that like, there's not one person to blame. So not even to take away from your point, or that I'm criticizing your point, it's agreement, but probably cycled learned behavior from what they would have experienced as parents, as children with their parents, and how passed down learned behavior. We see that then from Stephen Graham's character Eddie towards Luke. It's like, it's so interesting to watch unfold, man.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the final scene before we move to episode three, I know you loved it, is the closing part.
Yeah.
See Ashley Waters, they're going to have some chips and Chinese chips.
Yeah, because they were meant to end it on the drone shot and they brought it down. I told you, I'm heavy on these BTS stuff. Like, so it was meant to just be the drone shot to close it, the episode. Yeah, and then they were like, actually, we need to bring it down so we can see that last frame of him putting the flowers down, because I wasn't meant to be in it, because it was meant to end on,
you
like,
love that scene
of them.
I do,
because obviously social media is the whole thing of that episode mainly anyway, and it was meant to end on them like all walking down zombies to this thing again, and no one's looking
great up, shot, by the way,
other than Jade, because only Jade's looking at the world around her because her friend's just died.
Yeah,
so they're like, actually no, we need to bring the camera back down so we can understand, and bring it back down, and that's when we get one of the best scenes in that episode.
I think that is the best scene in that episode for me.
More than the sandwich. Oh, it's an episode, sorry.
You guys wouldn't believe me, we're an hour in. So let's
serious. Oh my goodness. Yeah, sorry guys.
Yeah, let's zoom. Yep, episode three for me, the best.
Okay.
Personally.
No, I hear it.
100%.
I think it's such a tough ask to evoke such emotion with two to three characters in quite a still environment. And we learn so much about Jamie in this specific episode.
Mm-hmm.
Erin Doherty's character,
Bryony Arison,
she's the psychologist. And the interesting thing that she said about this episode is that her character was essentially trying to get Jamie to say he didn't do it, not because she didn't want him to, no, essentially because she didn't want him to have done it. Mm-hmm. She had this, she had built this connection with this 13-year-old boy, which again, it speaks to your point about he's just a boy, he's 13. Yeah. She didn't want to believe that he had done it, but she knew. Mm-hmm. And I think all the characters kind of knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Eddie knew. His mum probably knew.
His mum knew for sure.
Definitely knew. Everybody knew. It was more about, again, the why. So when people are saying, oh, it's not a whodunit, that just, actually doesn't matter to me. Can I just say,
it means nothing.
Can I just say, do you know the people who are saying it's a whodunit? I don't want to say this, but like, just looking at them, you can kind of say like,
what's the episode?
Yeah, you can't read. You look at them, you're like,
you can't read out loud, bro.
I can tell, yeah.
I think the powerful thing about this episode, and all of them, with the one shot, there's no escape. Like, whether you're feeling the sort of solitude of a character who's left on their own, so Luke Bascombe, when he's in the room with the sort of foyer area, and he gets 2 minutes to himself, you're sat with that. Whether it's the chaos of the raid, you're sat with that.
Yeah.
Whether it's Jamie, like, having this sort of, I wouldn't call it a breakdown, but in episode 3 where we really get to see the to's and fro's of his character from 13-year-old child to angry murderer to 13-year-old child, and Erin Doherty's character, Bryony Harrison, and her reactions to his emotions.
Yeah.
Incredible TV for me. Thoughts in episode 3, man.
So that was obviously shot first.
Yes.
In terms of things. So that means that was the first time Owen Cooper's ever acted on screen.
Insane.
What a performance. Racial
talent.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
And he stopped one of the takes, yeah. It was going really well because he thought he was scaring her too much in real life. And then he had to get taken outside and be like, no, you're doing the right thing. But
she was in awe. I don't know if you've seen their clips together.
Yeah, she was like, I was really impressed by this boy. Like, she's obviously come from theatre, done all this stuff before, but I guess when you're told, like, oh, this is the first thing he's ever done in his life, and you're like, this is a one-take situation, you're probably thinking, oh, God, it's going to be such a tasking thing to do. I have to, like, coast him along. Not knowing that he was going to do that. Like, he's going to do so well. He was just terrified that he was actually scaring her. And there were so many moments in that, And I think it was when he was, after he hit the hot chocolate, and he's being really angry.
Was that the first time he lost his temper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she goes out to get another drink for herself, gets herself another tea. And then he asks for a hot chocolate. Then he goes,
I don't deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think he's manipulating, don't you?
Yeah. I'm really torn because I can't tell if he's manipulating her or if he's actually just being a child. I really can't tell, like, truly. And I think that's why I'm like, the show's so good, because there were moments in it where I was like, he's clearly manipulating her. But I was like, is it truly manipulation or is he just 13 still? Like, I don't think he's manipulating her. I think he is still a child, but he's a child that has been groomed and has done something completely heinous. So you're battling, like,
battle of emotions.
Can it really be manipulation if that's just your default reaction?
No, let me tell you right now, that child is a psychopath. 1,000%.
100%.
That child is a psychopath. Because I know a child like that and he scares them. Yeah.
I don't know how you know a child like that, by the way.
I'll tell you. Okay, right.
I don't know how the fuck you know a child like that.
Tell me, I don't want to know.
I don't want to know you anymore.
I'm telling you, that child is not all right. And I think they do a great job in terms of, like, showcasing the line, because he knows what he done.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's saying and how to say it. And they do a really good job of bringing it up, because he keeps bringing up the fact that he had other psychiatrists or therapists, whatever they are. And he says, oh, but if I say this and that, that makes them go away, essentially. Or they usually ask this question and I respond like this. He knows what he's doing. He knows the type of response he's going to get by acting a certain way. And he's frustrated because she's not giving that to him. Mm-hmm. She's not giving the response that she's meant to be given, because
she's speaking to him like an adult.
Speaking like an adult, because she's not allowing herself to be manipulated by this child. And there's even this scene when he gets up, starts shouting, getting angry, and the security guard comes in, tells him to turn sharp, and she puts her hand up and goes, look at you, who do you think you are? The Queen of England or something? Because he can't comprehend the fact that a woman has power over him and has power over the security guard over there. And then I think in that moment is when he starts crumbling a little bit, like his true colours are starting to show. And even how the episode ends was the most telling thing about the episode, because as soon as she leaves, she starts breaking down, because she had to spend the past hour sitting there with a monster, and she now realises this kid cannot be saved.
Yeah.
This kid is done out. And I think that's why after she leaves, he has a half-eaten sandwich and leaves it there.
And she can't touch it.
And she can't touch it. She can't bring herself to throw it away, because this kid is not okay. This kid is a monster.
And she wanted to believe in him.
And she wanted to believe in him. But she, that's, in that, on that day, she realises he did what he did and it's not changing him. I think that's how she feels, because he showed signs of an actual psychopath.
Yeah.
So do you guys think when he was asking her, do you like me, do you guys think that was manipulation?
No, I think that's him actually just wanting to be liked.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm but that's, so but
that's
difficult.
That's one of the different. That's one of the many dynamics of the whole show, right? Is that part of the problem with the young men that we're speaking about and men as a whole, not even just young men, because there's definitely fully grown men who have the same issue. Part of it is wanting to be liked by people, and specifically by women.
Yeah, because even when they, the whole thing that they hone in on is that 80% of women like 20% of men.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's the first thing Adam breaks down.
He got that so, from Andrew Tate from, yeah, from the right. drop.
But that's the thing is, that's so telling of how they really believe and how they think. And even her using the term incel in its very literal form, she was like, well, why wouldn't a 13-year-old be like,
yeah,
of course
yeah.
she spoke to him like an adult.
Because she was like, why wouldn't you be
incel, yeah.
like voluntary celibate? Like, because of course you are, because
you're 13.
You're 13 years of age, you're yeah. a child. Why, of course you should be, like, that's not, there that's not a thing, that's not that an insult.
Spoke to him about that. She spoke to him about, like, women's bodies. And
yeah, and him being like tits, and but she says chest, and she's like, you don't have to change the way you speak, just speak quite openly. And him lying about like, oh, girls are showing me their boobs, blah blah blah. And then him and him eventually being like,
that was one of the most interesting aspects of
yeah,
this.
Yeah, that part of the conversation, especially when she moves the chair to get closer to him. Yeah, and like, so the shot, you don't really see him in some of that shot, and it's only the side of
Bryony
that you see that for that part. And when he's talking about women, you're actually just watching her.
Yeah.
And he's not the focus of it, because it's like, women are still the victims to these men. And I think that's when we got to see, like, when everyone's talking about, we need an episode on the victims, blah, blah, I think that exact moment showed me how it really affects women. Do you know what I mean? Like, just having to sit there and just accept that men are just going to speak to you that way and about you that way. And it's just the by and by of and life. That's how
she is. From a very young
is.
Age, yeah. it's an embedded sort
yeah. Even, that was really important to me.
Even I think what might be the most sickening part of that one, of that scene, was when he said, oh, I didn't do it. But I could have done.
Yeah.
Other boys would have touched her.
Yeah.
I didn't touch her. That means I'm good, right? Bro, when I heard, I was like, yeah, get this nigga the fuck out of here, bro. Never let him outside ever again.
Underneath the jail.
Underneath the jail, bro. Yeah. Bro, that makes me good, right? Because the whole thing in terms of, like, even a lot of the stuff like comes from the manosphere is that, because I don't harm women, that automatically makes me
better than everybody
else. And even when he had a conversation with her, it's like, oh yeah, something about the 20% and 80% thing. Oh, I don't believe that. I think it's a lot. It's a lot more than that. As in, like, there's a lot more women that like less men in terms of that. It's just like his whole mentality in terms of how he thinks women and girls view him. Mm-hmm. Versus how he thinks women and girls should view him is probably this distortion in terms of why he treated Kate the way he did.
I think the fact he lied about
being
seeing women,
yeah,
or seeing young girls, sorry, of his age, mm-hmm. is how he would have spoken to his boys as well.
Yeah.
You know how, like,
when guys lie about...
I shouldn't even laugh, but you know, like, we all probably know someone that's lied about either being with a woman mm-hmm. or lied about something that's happened.
Yeah.
To like be cool and be seen mm-hmm. by their brethren.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that was what he was displaying with Erin. Yeah.
But I think this is why I don't think he was completely manipulating her, because I felt he got really comfortable at a point with her where he's kind of treating her like one of the mandem. That's what it felt like to me. And then him basically being like, I didn't care that she was fat, she was flat, then looked at her and then said, sorry, like, I was sorry you're flat chested, by the way, oopsie. Yeah, and I was like,
crazy.
You're getting too comfortable here. And then him being like, well, I asked her out because it wasn't a problem. But it's then like,
thought she would like me, it's crazy.
Yeah, but it's like, when you know, when you're like, the same reason, like, if someone moves to you and you're not like attracted to him, you have to say that you've got a boyfriend, because men respect the fact that there's another man there, yeah. as opposed to the fact that you don't want them.
Exactly.
The fact that you're single means that you should want them.
Exactly.
Yeah. But also having the view that 80% of women only want 20% of men, is that how you manage to be that 20% and also the 80% that women don't want as well? It's insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, no one... I think it's just like watching him not really believe what he's saying, because you can't think that and also think that she would want you after going through an incident of revenge porn. Like, it's just, how did we get here?
I think at that point he thought, because she was at the lowest that she could have been.
This is it, though.
That we now match up. And even her rejecting him mm-hmm. at that point means that my lowest is still not good enough mm-hmm. for you to get. I think that's what made him... angry eventually. I don't think he was manipulative throughout the whole thing. I think,
of course, there were pockets.
Yeah. I think there was definitely like signs of him being genuine. I think he actually does really like the therapist.
Yeah, I think he likes her a lot.
A lot, but not in a in a way that he fancies her.
No, not in a sexual way. I think he just he's found a woman that he actually thinks is cool. He can't believe that's what I'm saying. She's treating like the man them because like he got too comfortable being like tits and showed me and being like that didn't actually happen. Like all that happened and he's like. Actually, that didn't happen. So
he probably wouldn't tell his boys that though.
No, he didn't. That's what I'm saying.
He wouldn't tell his boys. You man, I was lying.
Yeah, of course not. But it's like he got super comfortable with her to a point where it's like, oh wait, I don't even need to lie to you. Like I've got nothing to prove here. Like that's not how these kind of relationships need to work anyway. So when the final part when he's like, oh, do you like me? And he's like, not in a fancy way. And he makes it so clear. Like I'm not feeling you, but I just do you like me? Yeah. And her being like, I think in her heart of hearts she doesn't like him. Yeah. I don't think she even respects him or anything. I think it's just like she's here to do a job. And the realization for him, like, oh my goodness, you tricked me almost. Like, you told me that we were friends, or he believed that's what friendship was.
She's there to do a job, man.
And then him, like, cooking and screaming, like, do you like me? And that being the only thing he honed on in the whole thing. Because she could have said he was a murderer. I don't think it would have bothered him as much as her being like, I don't like you.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to be liked.
He just wanted to be liked. Yeah. But I think that's what the whole, like, Manosphere thing is. That episode showed us that Manosphere benefits no one.
Exactly.
At the core of it.
It's the one. Katie's dead. Jamie's life's over.
Yeah. And at the core of it, it's just wanting to be liked, which is which is crazy. There's so much more we could do, but we have to do episode 4 because we've still got another show to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, kids. I know. We're going to do our best. That. We'll make it happen somehow.
Sorry.
It's probably some of the best podding we've done.
Yeah,
sorry.
Sorry, to be honest.
We're not really sorry, though.
Yeah, so the Severance one would be much...
I don't know about that, to be fair.
Can't guarantee it.
See? It's in my head. Episode 4 of Adolescence for me. This was the one where, when I posted my... Like, I did a review, obviously.
What's your page called?
I can't remember. I actually can't. But people were... That's crazy lad, by the way.
What's your page?
Yeah.
Oh, page.
You did a review in it.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so it was your page
called?
Oh, Midnight Gaz. Why?
No, don't do the shy thing. Save your chest. Midnight Gaz.
Yeah, Midnight Gaz, man.
No, because I'm going to pause that one.
But people in the comments were, man ain't going to pour, man.
Oh, sorry, baby.
I snatched it off her because she poured way too little.
But jokes aside, episode 4 was the one where people were like, they wanted a court case scene. It was boring. I'll repeat that after that.
I'm sorry, guys.
This was episode 4 was the one where people saying it's boring. They wanted a court case scene. They wanted to see who done it. They did it. I'm like,
but again,
we've got to 3 episodes, and you can't see what this show's trying to tell you.
Yeah.
And did you not watch episode 1?
Yeah.
That,
did you not watch episode 1?
Yeah.
Like he was literally, like
exactly. He was chinging it when you saw it.
Four chingings.
I think.
We didn't actually see him stab.
No, we did. We did.
That was him stabbing.
Everyone saw that because I didn't actually remember seeing that part. But I was like, I already decided that he did it. So
I saw that, I was like, there's no way that like he's not done it.
I think you could have concluded that he did it before that.
Yeah, I mean that's what my point.
That's what I knew. Yeah,
evidence not evidence. I would have said he done it.
If people weren't so weird about things, they could have done the show without actually showing that video because I would have
preferred.
Yeah, and
I know you specifically. If there's any one person in this world that would have preferred that not to be there, not that you didn't like
it,
is you.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because I feel like they get the point across so well.
I think they have to because people are so slow.
Clearly,
yeah, this is proof. Yeah. Even I think they might have had to do end and see him back. By the way, guys, he did take her life. Yeah. I think that should have been like the closing statement because at some point I was like, yo, guys, you guys are idiots.
Yeah, because I think it would have said quite a lot for them to actually do the whole show without actually showcasing any of the violence, but they had to do it because...
There was two beautiful things about episode 4 for me. One was the closing scene, but initially it's to see how Eddie communicates and reacts to, one, his community and where his standing is at this present moment in time compared to what it would have been maybe a couple months prior. Yep.
They're in a new house now as well. They're in London, aren't they?
No, it's still Doncaster. I got it wrong when I said that to you that time. It was all in Doncaster.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because didn't she say you can't go back up there?
Liverpool.
That's it.
Yeah. And the second one was just seeing how Eddie reacts, speaks to, deals with his wife and his daughter.
Yeah.
Completely different to Jamie. Mm-hmm. And the sort of like bubbling, visceral...
He's so snappy with his wife.
Sharp anger that he has... Less so with his daughter, more so with his wife, and how she deals with it with this sort of pretense, fake smile, reassuring, on edge, yet still loves him clearly and knows it's never, I highly doubt it would ever get to the point where Eddie is actually violent.
Yeah, but, it's a
but those patterns of behaviour are enough to say that it, one, it could,
yeah.
And two, Jamie would have learned and seen a lot of that and replicated that behaviour with young girls of his age in school, in the era, in the community, etc.
But we also see the constant coddling in episode two. So like the mum does the same thing to the dad where he's snappy with her, he's horrible to her, he's really rude to her. She just goes, well, I didn't mean it like that, as opposed to like, don't raise your voice at me. Do you know what I mean? Like anyone can... He can't speak to anyone like that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But he gets away with it because it's her. At, to a point so that he's getting so snappy at her, the water's overflowing in the sink. Like, you're actually so angry at your wife that you're messing up the house and being like, I'll fix it later. It's fine. I'll fix it later. But also, it's not funny, but the neighbour...
Oh, the way they were cussing the neighbour was...
Amazing.
Yeah.
The neighbour was... She was sweeping... Guys, she was sweeping the street. Right? She was sweeping the road, the pavement. She was sweeping the pavement, guys. She was in the garden of her house. She was on the pavement, the council-owned pavement, sweeping nothing. I said, this is brilliant.
This is
fantastic. That was so good. But it was like a moment of like... normality in the whole show with just them living regular lives and being regular people in a regular community where they're just like, oh yeah, we just got nosy neighbors, because you get nosy neighbors,
everyone.
But also like there's a sweet, like, not irony, but there's something about them misspelling the word nonce and also calling them a nonce. There's something in it where it's just like, because even
I thought that was a great touch.
Yeah, because they're trying to break it down, like, who's the nonce? Is Jamie the nonce? Is Eddie the nonce? And I think the family trying to discuss who is the nonce here is it would be like, and then her on the phone to the police being like, they spelled nonce, N-O-S-E. And then she's like, well, yeah, I know they misspell it, but that's what they spell. It's nonce, isn't it? That right there, yeah, that little sequence, about a 5 minute song, is so funny, but it's so like, we're just saying words. Once, we're like, saying words. We're just not saying, we don't really mean what we're saying.
Yeah. When that happened, I knew it was funny, but I couldn't bring myself to smile.
Because I was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it was the neighbour sweeping nothing. Matched with the misspelling of a nonce. And I was just like,
Eddie's reaction.
Yeah, Eddie'd be like, yeah, you're right, you fucking. Like,
yeah, no, really good time. I feel like he ripped that.
Yeah, he wrote that.
I feel like he ripped that shit, man.
Something that you mentioned earlier in terms of how in this episode we see how Eddie interacts with the community. I think what this show done really well is to showcase how different parts of our lives is accountable for what Jamie actually eventually does.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the last episode kind of highlight like how the, because even when he went to the store to buy the paint, and that loser was just like, oh, I'm with your son, I believe your son, blah, 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 blah.
But I think that shows the lack of community, because what it shows you is that there are people that are on these dirty forums, these Telegram chats, whatever they are, just being like, well, if she was really dead, or if this really happened, or this is escape the Matrix bullshit.
Is that what you're saying, though?
Yeah. But saying like, that community itself is also
at fault
for what, like, I saw that Steven spoke about this, but I don't think he put it down into... He didn't highlight like each episode being part of different part of Ryan's life. That's what assuming what they tried to do. And I feel like in the last episode, they tried to highlight how the community that you actually live in also contributes to the fact that these kids are doing what they're doing.
Oh, retweet them.
And
I just jumped the gun, my bad.
It's okay. And I feel like episode three highlighted how systems that are meant to there to help...
To protect
kids as well... also contribute to this, because they don't do a far enough job. Because
did you see how the guard spoke about him?
How did he?
It was, to my memory, it was sort of very much waste of your time sort of thing.
He's a lost cause already.
Yeah.
Your point was, arguably, yes, because of what he's done and the behaviour he displays. He's still 13.
Yeah.
But there's also one part we didn't really discuss in episode three, quickly. Was the guards?
You got. I'm joking.
The guards and what is her name?
Briny.
Yeah.
Yep.
That interaction made me feel really uncomfortable.
When he was standing behind her.
The level of uncomfortable was like, I think it made me feel the most uncomfortable for the final scene. But I was like, and especially I saw a lot of women talking about it online, was that you can't pinpoint certain things, but it just isn't right. We just know it's not okay. But you just,
it's little eggs, man.
But the thing is, you can't, like, you know, you can't say things. You can't be like, oh, he's a perv or he's a what. But it's just the emotion where it's like,
yeah,
oh, it's just something.
Because
and you tell a girl like, he's just a bit,
it's enough.
Bit weird.
Yeah, he's giving. Yeah.
He's just a bit.
Yeah.
He's just a bit. And everyone knows what that means.
But he's a little weird. Turns into.
Yeah, but the thing
can
is,
can turn into.
But you know what that means. Yeah. You guys ever watch How to Have Sex?
No.
Yeah, there's a scene in How to Have Sex, yeah, where she's... Everyone knows it's like...
just continue.
That was a good joke. Come on. Was.
No, so because, no, if because the scene's about... The scene's about sexual assault.
let's move on then.
Go on.
Back to what you were saying, actually, because I interrupted you.
But yeah, I feel like every episode highlights a different part of Jamie's life that potentially contributed to him becoming what he becomes. I can't remember.
This is a conversation I have with...
I was going to say one thing real quick. It takes a bit of that saying where they say like it takes a village to raise a son. Yeah.
But this is a conversation I was having.
The village raised that boy.
Yeah.
A conversation I was having every time like a knife crime event happened. And I'll be quick. Every time something with knife crime, and specifically, I guess, with young men, women now, I guess.
Sorry, this is so unrelated, but do you call boys boys or do you call them young men?
I think because of the line of work I was in, young men.
That's really interesting.
Which is, again, you could argue, yeah. Young men, young children. I tend to use those two. I don't really say children ever. But I worked with 8-year-olds as well. So you know what? It varied depending on the specific group.
Yeah, no, because that was a really highlight point in like how we, our language and how we speak about kids. Like, when a young girl goes missing, they call her a young woman, even though she's a minor.
Yeah.
And that's like a common thing for like the Met Twitter page. And everyone's like, why are you not calling her a child?
Right.
A child has gone missing because when you say young woman, it indicates she's 23, 24.
Exactly.
And
that's what I think. Yeah.
She's gone a weekend away with her boyfriend. It's just is a minor as opposed to this is a child that has gone missing.
Yeah.
And
I'm with you.
There's something about language. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I interrupted you again.
Nah, so like, I'll explain that part first because I guess it's worth it. If it's like 8 to 11, 12, I'd say children. That's how I'd describe them because I used to work with children as well.
Yeah.
13 to 15, I would say young children. And if they're like 16 to 18, I'd say like
young people, young men.
When I worked with them, obviously part of the work I was doing was using sports to engage with young people, right? Mm-hmm. To keep them out of trouble. It ended up giving them different opportunities. Anyway, that doesn't really matter. But when... The purpose of it beyond is keeping young people engaged and giving them opportunities to do things that wouldn't necessarily be available if we weren't there. And every time something happens, I always, in terms of an incident, knife crime, gun crime, crime as a whole, I always say to people, like, you don't have to work with young people. You don't have to start a sports club. You don't have to start a youth centre. You just need to speak to the young people within your little area, or your community, your cousins, your brothers, your sisters, your nieces, your nephews, the children that you see when you're going to the shop, that you might, you know, your neighbour, you say you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to just engage with those. That's you playing your part.
Yeah.
And that speaks to the part about the raising the village thing. Because when I was young, I had people that would just chat to me. They would like, give me a tenner. Just for like, you know, how you doing? Tenner. Go get some sweets and that. Look after yourself when I was playing that. And I was like, that's all it really, not, that's not going to be the defining factor to decide whether a child ends up in crime, ends up committing a crime, shall I say. But it can all play a part towards.
It all does play a part.
Yeah. And I think that's what you're trying to get to, I guess, is that like the neighbour would have seen probably Jamie at some point with his friends walking to the park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beyond the how are you, was there an engagement?
Yeah. Why are you
did she know who Jamie really was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not her job. She doesn't have to do that.
I think we should all make it I think the show after you watch all four episodes, you realise that you can make a change.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole thing.
From the teacher
to
the neighbour, even people that are working in these institutes that are coming across these kids, just because they are accused of a crime, it doesn't mean that you have to write them off for life. I know what I said about Jamie, that's a different...
not for him, underneath the jail. Yeah.
But like in general, like even just outside of like it just being a TV show, which I think that's the importance of like creating art, is for to create conversations about life sometimes, it is very important for people to see. I would like for people to see this and realise that we all contribute to... Mm-hmm. The issues that I'm talking about, this specific issue in terms of young boys, the way they treat girls, and the rise of femicide that we've had in recent years, we all contribute to that in some way, shape, or form. And that's not to put blame on anybody. Mm-hmm. That's just highlighting the fact. And I think that's what the show did. It wasn't trying to say
one thing is the reason.
Yeah,
and that's why it's so important, because it isn't one thing, isn't it?
And that's I guess episode 4 is so interesting because we really see who Eddie is as a man.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a bad man, but a man with issues. Yeah. A man with huge issues.
Also in episode 3, because we get to see Jamie speak about Eddie. So we don't actually know Eddie enough. Like we kind of have an idea of him from episode 1. But Jamie breaks it down for us in episode 3 and we're like, Jamie doesn't rate his dad.
Yeah.
He thinks his dad lives a mundane life. And it's just so Andrew Tate-ish, yeah. But he's like, well, if that's where you want to live your life, then I guess so. That's like, it works for you. And I want more for myself. Mm. But saying that, whilst you're in...
A true dedicated job that's more than a 9-to-5
craft
that not many people can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's his perception.
And we truly need more plumbers as well. That's not even a joke. Like, less rappers. So, like, stuff like that, yeah, is... Stuff like that. The fact that
the mic's down.
The fact that he doesn't rate
his dad.
No more podcasts. No more rappers. The fact that he doesn't rate his dad, and then we see his dad almost be like quite a stable provider for his household. Like I think he does quite a good job. Yeah.
From that side, 100%.
Yeah. I feel like he, for what Jamie deems as a man, I feel like he does it really well.
But the emotional connection is missing.
This is it, and that's why he doesn't rate him.
Because and I think that's where one, how he treats his wife and his daughter, the snappiness, the sort of very over the top masculinity that we see from him, which again I can just see the picture. He would have learned that from his dad.
Yeah.
His dad would have been like that.
It's performative. It's all performative.
Didn't he say though, so like in there, I don't know what point it was, that he used to get hit as a child and then, like, he wouldn't do it to his kids.
So he thinks he's doing better than
what
you meant.
So it's not the same thing, but in terms of like what Jamie says to the therapist, in terms of
I didn't
touch her, that makes me good. It's the same mentality that his dad had. Obviously, it's like I didn't hit my kids.
So
obviously, that's
a better parent.
Therefore, I'm a better parent. And kids do not know how to contextualize stuff.
Yep.
So Jamie grew up seeing his dad not hit his mom, which is a good thing. But he's also seen his dad like be angry a lot, but never really express his emotions in a healthy way.
Just boiling up.
So now Jamie's grown up never knowing how to express his emotions in a positive, healthy way because his dad. I've done it in a way they think it's because I'm not hitting my kids, I think that's more than enough, which it actually isn't more than enough for, especially for men, to be able to express yourself. You have to let it go somehow. And unfortunately, because Jamie is a kid, he's a child,
he doesn't know how to.
He doesn't understand that. He doesn't understand why his dad has to bottle up his emotions in the way that he does. He doesn't understand why his dad does just lash out now and again, which you're more than... It's more than fair for people to just randomly lash out. Obviously,
within context.
Especially if you're not doing it to other people. But Jamie never understood that. So he thought that he can just bottle everything up just like his dad until he gets to the point where he can't anymore. And because the girl rejected him, he now has to do the worst thing that he possibly could. But yeah.
And then... Go on.
I can't tell because I say he doesn't rate his dad, but I still think he doesn't rate his dad, but still... longs for approval from his dad and like validation from his dad. Like him calling his dad on his birthday to tell him that he's gonna plead guilty. Yeah, that's when I saw real manipulation from him. Is him rating his dad, wanting to like his dad to respect him, but also being that 13-year-old that has a lot more power than he thinks he did. Or is that 14 at the time? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's him being like, happy birthday, like what do you guys do? Oh, this happened, all right, great. Well, I'm gonna plead guilty, basically.
Yeah, not to make this about me.
But, yeah.
and then being like, and then his dad being like, oh, so like also your sister and your mum are here. And he's kind of like, well, I thought I called you.
Yeah.
He sounds disgusted the idea of that women would be there because like, I called you. Why are you?
Yeah.
Why are they picking up? What the fuck is that about? Yeah. And then his mum being like, oh, by the way, I've told them like you've got allergies and like her genuine concern.
And how
for
how nobody, as soon as he said it, nobody wanted to address it. His dad didn't say anything. His mum and sister talking about other stuff. My guy, he just admits murder.
But I think that's, so then you talk about him putting the different top now. And I think it's just them understanding that life is going to move on without Jamie.
Yeah.
I think that was just that. I think everyone already knew. But
they just didn't want to know.
The realization hits them then.
They want to know in it. Like you want to lie, to yourself as much as you can.
Him admitting it is a different thing from seeing it.
Yeah.
Even though seeing it is the worst thing ever, him admitting that he did it, he's going to plead guilty.
Yeah.
And then the closing scene for me was one of the best scenes of the entire series, where the mum says to Eddie, like, your anger is a problem. You've bottled this up for years and years and years, and we're part of the issue. We're part of the reason why Jamie is the way he is. I thought that was one of the... Like, if you didn't get the point of the series, I think that specific scene is the picture. It's the visualization of the fact that we all play a role, and the parents specifically have ignored signs because it's their 13-year-old boy, Jamie. Yeah. They've ignored patterns of behaviour. They've ignored him when they would say, go to bed, and he'd say, yeah, I'm going to bed, and he's not going to bed.
Yeah.
They've ignored all the key signs, all the small key signs that can lead towards.
But do you know what I really loved about that sentence? Is because they say that we are the reason why it's like that. When they have the interaction with the daughter and say, like, how lovely of a woman she is, like, how, because before it says, how do we make a child like this? I said, but we also made a child like this.
That, yeah.
In terms of, like, yes, you are responsible for the way that Jamie is, but it's not just you. It's also his environment. It's also his community. It's also his school.
Like, it's also him.
Yeah, so it's
from accountability. It's also him, yeah. How he decided to process what he's learned. So.
Yeah. I want to add one quick thing about episode four. Something that I really loved was the, obviously they had the shot when they were driving to the shop, the marketplace.
Yeah.
And we had the camera from outside.
I know you're going
to. Outside facing in.
Yeah.
And it was all three of them chilling together, having a good time. Mm-hmm. And then obviously he gets to the shop. He flips out. He has the whole scene. When he gets back into the car, the camera is now inside.
Yeah.
And it's only doing individual shots. Mm-hmm. It's only looking them as separated. Like, I think it showcased to me that.
But it's not always three but of them. It's just, yeah.
Is it the mum and the daughter?
And it's Jamie. And it's, yeah.
Yeah. It's either the mum and the daughter, or it's just
Eddie by himself.
And I think that was very, very intentional. If my favourite frame was the last frame of episode three, that particular, those two combined, were my favourite shot.
Yeah.
For the show, because it kind of like highlight visually just showed you the separation and the division that they just went through because of that scene. And now they can't connect in that particular moment because of what just happened.
And also, like, the mom's kind of holding the daughter as well. Like, they're really close.
Tense.
They're sat really close to each other. Yeah. As opposed to the first shot where she's kind of sat in between her parents, where she's leaning more towards her mum and kind of like holding her mum for like, oh, you're the parent that's kind of stable here. Like, I can't, like, that's not even looking at us. Like, he's talking, but he's talking straight on. And even when he
puts on autopilot.
Even when he puts up the phone, puts up with his left hand and doesn't look at the screen at all.
And he's trying to, I think they tried to compartmentalize the situation by, oh, let's play some music. What's your favourite songs? I want to play a good song with some bass and blah, blah. I think that was him just trying to, like,
He was going through it.
Yeah,
he was going through it. But sorry,
one of the best shows of the year.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Ask me again in December. I'll say the same thing.
Yeah, if there's another show that I already got my top two. If there's any other show that enters my top two at this point, Insanity.
One of the best of the year. Phenomenal from everyone. I think we've done it justice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, kids.
Hour and a half.
Sorry, horse.
Is
sorry,
it?
Fair enough. Shit, it was then. A good topic to talk about.
I think it needed that amount of time though.
Yeah. Sorry.
It needed more, but fair enough.
we could have done this for 3 hours, you know.
Yeah, we could have.
Oh, easy.
I could have done 4 an hour per app.
Yeah, exactly.
Really and truly. I got things to say.
We'll do the Dr. Uber thing.
Yeah.
One day, when there's enough resources, we can just do what we want, though, innit?
Yeah. Real life.
Got to make it happen. Severance finale. Amazing, amazing series. It's the closer, man.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the episode?
Should I go or do you want to go first?
I want to say three really short things, yeah. Oh, sorry, my feet are on the magazines. Sorry. The comics. My bad. Bitch, shut up.
Guys, for those that don't know, that was Hussam in the building.
The bum bitch from the last one. All right, so yeah, three things.
Yeah.
Firstly, thank you, Apple, for making it 1.5. That's my rule when it comes to the ending episode of any series.
Oh, it should be like
it should be a time and a half always. So it was an hour and 30. It felt like a movie.
And they extended the season because season one was 9 episodes. Yeah. Gave us an extra episode. Thank you.
How kind. Love you down. Second thing, I have finally sat with why I love this show so much.
Okay.
And honestly, it's the way it's filmed. The way it's shot is really the thing.
Gorgeous.
The use, I was looking into, like, honestly, I'm currently like.
Oh, you're becoming money.
I'm on that side of TikTok now. It's quite dangerous. I'm trying to leave the other side, but it's just weird. But
Everyone's weird.
What other side is weird?
There's a side of Severance TikTok that's really odd.
Oh, Severance.
Wait, where you're not being honest, you're just saying things that you don't really mean. Like, that wasn't the sound. That was a sound like shush, you know what I mean? But it was like the use of negative space and how that makes it more gorgeous.
Make it 15.
And makes it.
Make it 15.
And makes it more put together. And then third point, yo, Heliar is a bum bitch. I don't like Helena. I don't like Heliar. I don't like either.
Why don't you like Heliar?
Heliar thinks she's better than everyone else. Still, she is still. She's still got remnants of Helena in her. Like she.
I mean,
she actually said that. Though.
She goes out of her way to prove that I'm not one of them. Yeah, but you told him.
That look she gave, yeah, Miss Casey, yeah. It wasn't like a menacing look, but it was a look of like.
Do you think that's Helena or Helena?
People think it's Helena.
I can't decide right now. I couldn't tell.
I'm convinced it's Helena though.
Yeah, it probably is. And if it is, that makes it worse because then you should, if you're truly different, you should have told him to go through that door.
No, but I think that's one. You need to understand, like, innies have their own life. You're asking that innie to essentially kill themselves for the sake of that outie. I'm sorry, if I was an innie, I'll be selfish as well. I'll do my own thing.
But if you're so different, and you're, because you, your but whole
she's
thing is
not different. No, but then
shut your mouth and stop telling us you are.
And one thing that I feel like Severance has made it very clear, how love transcends Severance. Like, if you have this level of love for something, somebody, it kind of puts you and
the faith that Gemma showed.
Exactly.
The faith that she showed in a guy that's bloody.
Save
you.
Because there's still like, because love transcends.
There's still a connection that's. Mm-hmm.
And I think with Heli R, because remember what Irv said about Helen, the difference between Helena and Heli R is that.
She's cruel.
Helena's cruel, yeah. And Heli R isn't cruel. What Heli R did at the end of the latest episode, the smile and the look that she gave Gemma, that felt really cruel. And the reason I think that is the case is because she's now morphing into the two of them, mm-hmm. and just because of how she feels about Mark.
You were about to call him. Yeah.
It's the way that she feels about Mark because love transcends Severance. Once you have that level of love for something, you start to mix and match between your innie and your outie. And I think that's what happened at the end of the last episode. I'm not mad at Heli R for her wanting to be with Mark.
I was initially.
You get one last lips and then you tell him to go find his wife.
Pisalo, you're living in a fantasy world though.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, no, because.
If that was you, it'd be like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, the reason, no, but I haven't said that I'm better. Heli's whole thing is that she's better than them.
She's not a human being.
She's a bum. I'm sorry, man. She's so jarring. I don't like Heli.
You're too stubborn with this one.
I am too stubborn with this one. What are you talking about?
You're wrong, man.
I'm not finding reasoning with this one. No, Heli R has made our whole thing that how could you not tell? She's looking at Mark S being like, how could you not tell the difference between me and Helena? We're meant to be so different. They're looking like the same person now to me.
Still goes back to his point.
But you guys are basing the whole like, oh, this is human emotion. No, if your whole thing is that you should be able to tell the difference between me and my outie, but you're acting like your outie. I don't like you. I don't like your outie either. I don't like your innie or your outie. I don't like Helena.
I think that's what he's trying to say is that she might think she's better than Helena, but we know she's not. So she
doesn't make it better. The fact that she knows that she's a piece of shit. Yeah,
she does like she's a piece of shit.
But I still dislike her for being a piece of shit, whether she knows or not. I don't like that about her.
But you don't like her.
I do like people. I like Irv. I like Irv.
I don't actually want to convince you to like her.
Yeah.
So, but I
understand her decision. Yeah.
I completely understand why she did it. Okay. She's in love. Oh my gosh, I get why she did it. I just wish she did it. Of loving. No. I am a lover girl.
Okay.
Have you ever been in love?
Don't ask me stupid questions. Can you go back to what you were
saying? I think the interesting thing about season 2 and the interesting thing about episode 10 was the concepts of like autonomy, freedom and choice and like how love can, as you said, supersede all of those things. The scene with Mark and the camcorder for me was fucking incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Television.
It was really funny.
It was like the facial expressions of outie Mark initially.
Yeah.
Very hopeful, very like convinced that it was going to go his way. And the way the conversation between the two through the camcorder, beautifully framed, by the way. And I love the sort of the colour scheme and the grade, not the colour the scheme, the grading, the lighting, had this sort of ominous feel throughout. But it felt like a tennis match, their conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rallying back and forth. And it sort of sped up during that particular period as well. The more frantic Mark, outie Mark becomes and innie Mark.
Desperate, yeah.
Because and it's him mispronouncing Helena as well.
That would have done it for me as well.
Yeah, complete piece of shit. And it becomes this sort of entitlement of, yeah, you should serve me. You should do this for me.
Yeah.
Completely lying that he's going to benefit innie Mark going forward in terms of his relationship with Helena. Almost got it wrong. I thought it was an incredible scene. And at the end of the day, you've created this person. And this person has evolved and developed feelings, created his own life, his own relationships, his own emotions, to the point where, why would he help you out?
But then he actually did.
He did the one thing that you asked him to do.
Yeah.
He rescued Gemma.
Yeah.
He got her out and he chose himself.
Yeah. As he should.
Which he's never been able to do. Yeah. Because they're always, their actions, for the most part, are driven by what the outies do. This is the first time he's had autonomy. And it's such an interesting contrast with Dylan. Oh, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Oh, Dylan's character being like.
But before we get to the Dylan character part, yeah.
Wait, sorry. One thing about. Didn't he just risk it all for 10 minutes? Because surely he's going to get back to his outie. Like, his outie is the person. Like, his innie hasn't really got a life.
But before we get to that, yeah. Milchek giving Dylan the papers and just running out.
No, Milchek
I promise you, that is the funniest scene ever. And so I was cackling.
Because there was no reason for him to run
there was
like
no
that.
Why.
No, Milchek.
I said he did it spontaneously.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Milchek is an amazingly written character. Yeah. He's so fun. That scene when he's in the lift with Mark here and be like, just tell Aaron that you fucked the thingy. I was like, oh, I love Milchek.
Innie in the oval.
And even him being like, the back and forth between him and
Drummond.
Yeah. Drummond?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the speech, yeah. Just the whole, that whole situation.
Oh, you're talking about Kier?
Yeah, Kier.
Okay, cool.
That whole situation was absolutely.
The Kier thing was a bit weird to me.
Yeah, but it's like.
Intentionally, I know.
It's, I'm still not really sold on the whole idea of race being part of sex.
Oh, it definitely is.
I don't like it. I don't think it's necessary because Milchek's not severed. So he doesn't need to act like. Him being shot that he's being racially profiled at work is odd to me.
Why?
Because a black man doesn't know that he's black.
No, he knows he's black and he's uncomfortable at the fact that, like, for when he got the picture thing, the painting of the black guy, he felt very uncomfortable. He was like, bro, why?
And then he went to Natalie for
reassurance. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Natalie was like, no, you're darker than me.
Yeah. I'm not like you.
They're not like us.
I think, and I like the way that even. I'm not sure if this is intentional. I feel like it was the fact that they used a HBCU marching band. I thought that was very intentional.
Super intentional. Everything intentional for Milchek is revolving around his race a lot, and everything they did, like the fact that he's now rebelling against the HBCU as well, and like that whole marching band, and it's like the innies versus everyone else. Yeah, and Milchek being the bad guy for so long, mind you, he's actually not the bad guy.
Yeah.
He really isn't the bad guy. He's just
he's not a good guy either.
He's not. He's just a deliverer of like bad news. But I don't think that's why. Like when he dropped the message to Dylan and run, it's just like.
Oh, by the way, firstly, Zach Cherry actually wrote that intentionally. Like he wrote the message on the to his innie.
To his outie.
And I've.
He's innie.
He's innie.
Which the first message?
The second message.
The
one that's given back to you by Milchek.
Yeah.
Today,
okay. It was so funny. He's like fuck you.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I get it. She's lit.
Yeah.
We understand each other. Like we like the same things. We like her. We love her. And I guess she saw in you what I used to be, mm-hmm. and that's why she fell for you because I used to be that person, and I hope to become that person again. Which speaks. I found that sort of interaction.
So really now that we finished this season, guys, do you get severed?
Never. You wouldn't.
I kind of want it. I want to see what my innie's like. I want to see what innie persona's into.
What do you think your innie will be into?
What do you think your innie will be into?
I've got jokes to make. I'm not making it now. No way. You ain't getting me. No, great season. I really enjoyed. Dylan's story was my favorite, but yeah, what were you gonna say?
Quick one, when you're talking about the back and forth that Mark Innie was having with Outie, at the end of that, I love that transition of him saying that, the next time I wake up, it better be in the seventh floor, or you'll never see Gemma again. And then he leaves and shut the door, and the transition into the elevator, fucking cold.
No, I still don't understand how they get in and out of being Outies and Innies. It's just got a random door.
No, it depends on doors. Like that door
was testing. That was their birthing place. Right?
Birthing place. So women that go in there and they have the severance trip will go in there and they become the innie, so they don't have to go through the pregnancy. So they got severed to be pregnant,
I'm watching a different show.
Pregnancy pain. Yes, you are.
I'm watching a different show.
Because this was highlighted in the first season as well.
I'm watching a different show.
You are. It's okay. That's why you hear Elliot.
I think one of those things that shows that is the Devon scene, right, with the woman.
Yeah, because
I understood that part, but now I was like.
But then she was saying, like, from.
Hey, Kiz is telling us to wrap up.
Kiz, shut your mouth.
Sorry. We have to. I'm going to get earful.
No, tell us that we said fuck him.
Yeah. Oh, no, but Sola said.
No, play it.
Fuck Kassab.
We're going to. Five minutes. It's our fault.
Tem's going to beat me up if he's bad.
It doesn't matter.
It is.
Kiz gets the blame. It's how it works.
No, it's our fault. Go on. Five minutes.
But yeah, the birthing place has been a thing since season one. Yeah. But it's okay.
No, okay, let's, I actually didn't understand that.
Let's go through what was our highlight from one season two and
episode seven.
Two from episode 10.
Episode 7 is my highlight of
why season.
I think it was such a beautifully shot episode. I really enjoyed Gemma. What's her name?
Deshan Lachman.
Her acting was superb, and this is the first time that we got like proper scenes from her instead of getting like 0.5 seconds of her, a shot of her from the previous episodes. Mm-hmm. To see her engage and even interact with Marcus's character, I really, really liked the interaction that they had and the chemistry they had throughout. It was just a really interesting episode, and I think it was like directed amazingly. For that to be a director debut, it was a great watch. So that's my favorite part.
Episode 10.
My favorite part from episode 10.
By the way, it's just the dancing from Milchek was fucking incredible.
It made me feel like I was in a fever dream. Yeah. But what I really liked was the shot of Dylan when he says "fuck you, Milchek," and with the red. I thought that was a great shot.
The use of red in the episode was great.
It was amazing. Yeah, yeah.
So from the whole season, I really enjoyed episode 8.
I really love episode.
Somebody called it boring.
It's like, oh, shit, yeah, fuck. I think it was.
I've stopped listening to them. Yeah. I told you, I'm on a really good side of Severance to talk now.
It's so beautiful.
The way everyone feels about episode 7 is how I actually felt about episode 8.
Fair enough.
I think that was like the one, because it is the context episode for me. Everything makes sense for me, and I was really unsure about whether I liked Miss Cobell or not. And I think I still don't know, but it gave me more of an insight onto whether I can make that decision or not.
Get to know her more.
Yeah. And then the final episode, my favorite part was, even though I hate them and they're not Endgame. Yeah, it's them, Marques and Helena.
Closing scene.
Yeah, running down the thing.
They said they did it intentionally, like a 60s, 70s.
Yeah, because it's like, they switched from a regular shot to recording film. Yeah. So yeah, and it's like they had to mess around with the light because there's people on set with epilepsy and stuff, so they can't be flashing red and white lights. Yeah. Really interesting.
You can tell that they really love writing the show. Yeah. They use so many like other references. Even one of the writers is an Arsenal fan. He keeps giving people awesome players' names because one of the characters is called Bukayo.
Who the hell was called Bukayo in that show?
One of the I think it's one of one of the marching guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
it's a great series. What's wrong with it? We probably like in another time we might get to do a better deep dive in it. Yeah. But I loved it. I loved episode 10. I thought it was great.
Your two from the season and from
episode. I haven't got an episode, but I guess it's the Dylan, Gretchen, Outie Dylan, Innie Dylan, Gretchen, the interesting dynamic of their relationship, the test that one has for the other, Outie Dylan for Ellen, the deception from Gretchen was so interesting because she felt like she had to keep it a secret for so long, which is understandable, but then she admits to him, and then how he feels about his Innie. He has a hatred for his Innie, but his Innie is the person that he used to be. It's just it's an interesting like psychology, I guess. So I loved episode. I think they're in episode 3, 5, and 7. No, 3, 5, and 9. Because I think episode 9 is when Gretchen admits
that she's still seeing him.
That she's not going to see him anymore. And he proposes and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Episode 10, it's either the use of red in the scene where we see the blood of Mark after he's absolutely...
I didn't like that blood scene.
Butchered my guy Drummond.
It wasn't really red. It was like really pink. It's such a minute thing, but I hate when there's blood on camera and it's not actually red.
Uh-huh. What I really enjoyed about it though was the use of red for the floor as well, which kind of coincided with the red on his shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And like what that, I guess the feelings of like emotion that he would have been feeling at that time when he saves Gemma and then they're trying to escape. And then the decision to make whether to stay with Heli or Gemma, and he's like toing and throwing and finally makes his decision, which again, I think is the right thing to do. Be selfish. He's never been able to be selfish in his life.
Yeah.
He's done
a version of someone else.
No,
I am.
He's a person.
He is, yeah.
They become people.
No.
They have feelings, thoughts.
You have to go home. You're only locking from 9 to 5.
They are home and they're staying there.
Oh, brother.
But yeah, we are the post-credit scene podcast. Kiz is telling me that I need to fuck off out of here, so fuck with Sam in it. Sorry.
And Kiz as well. Don't limit it.
He's all right, man. He's all right. We are the post-credit scene podcast, 14HK original, lovers of film, TV and theatre. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. I think we've podded fairly well today, fairly efficiently, fairly well. It was a really enjoyable episode for me anyway. And that's us over and out.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch and you are listening to the post-credit scene podcast.